Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Hey, Monday, everybody. Time to get your week going. Time to end mine. I'm on this ridiculous reverse schedule whereby I have this is actually my Friday, so the day job is still here. Although we're working on getting some sponsors, I got new ideas, I got new things going on. I've got just a pile of stuff happening. We got new guests in the works. I have a guest that's so exciting I can't even tell you about it. So that's how exciting this is. But things are happening. Action Radio is definitely taking action, and we are going to explode onto the scene. Onto the national scene at some point here. I don't know when. I don't know. I mean, I keep thinking it's going to happen, and we keep getting closer and closer. It's like, you know, waiting for the dam to burst, and we know we're there. We're right there, you know, with things happening with our legislation, with the information that we're discovering, and all the things that are going on. And in the second hour today, I'm going to be talking about the Vaccine Bill of Rights, because nothing is more pressing than the constant removal of our constitutional rights, which, of course, is illegal. They can't do it. The health Marxists. I mean, that's a new term, the health Marxists. So that'd be primarily Dr. Fascist, otherwise known affectionately around here as, we call him affectionately Dr. Fascist. You know him as Dr. Anthony Fauci, the most evil, genocidal, psychopathic drug pusher ever to hit this country. Yeah, I said it. I'll be like Mark Levin. Yeah, I said it. So there, yeah. He's a homicidal, psychopathic drug pusher. That's what he does. He's forcing vaccines on all you folks, and he wants to take your rights away, so you have to take them. This is nuts. This is insane. Don't do it. It's only going to get worse. The health problems, the initial health problems that you get are nothing compared to what's going to happen later on. And remember, this is an experiment. Okay, they don't know what they're doing. That's why they call it an experiment. An experiment is where you don't know the outcome. So basically, the entire population of the world is one big genetic modified experiment of messenger RNA, you know, shots, which they don't know what they're going to do. But they don't care because they're not. They have no immunity. You know, I mean, they have full immunity from product liability. So they don't care. So not only can they inject the whole world with an unapproved, you know, FDA experimental, you know, messenger RNA shot where they really don't know what's going to happen, there's no consequence for doing it. This is the most fascinating thing I've ever seen in my life. And the most staggering part about this is that the one thing that's never talked about with COVID is a cure. Now, we know the cure. The cure is hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, and azithromycin. Dr. Zelenko, you know, proved that years ago. Oh, not years ago. Excuse me. Last year. I'm getting really excited now because I'm mad. Can you tell? All right. And Shannon's like, Craig, can you get me on the show? Yeah, I'll get you on the show. But this is all going on. And we knew this a year ago. March 2nd, I broke the news that chloroquine kills COVID. Okay. Hydroxychloroquine kills it better and faster and safer. Okay. Zinc completely kills it. Hydroxychloroquine breaks down the protein wall of the virus. Zinc kills it and stops it from replicating. And zithromycin stops you from getting another infection like pneumonia. Okay. That's it. That's the cure. Okay. There was never a need for a pandemic. The pandemic is a hoax. Okay, the pandemic could have been cured in a few weeks if everybody had gotten their Zelenko protocol as a preventive. You know, this whole thing would have been over in like 2 or 3 weeks because everybody would have been either prevented or cured. And the virus would have had nowhere to go. It would have died. It would have been gone. But no, we're here a year later, still pushing vaccines on pregnant women of all things. This is nuts. Let me get Shannon on here. I'm curious what she thinks. But that's just I didn't even intend to start that ramble. There's something that happens when the mic goes on. I really have no control. It's like a reflex. It's like, oh, the mic's on. Okay, Greg, time to talk. And it's like, you know, I have my, it's like someone gave me an adrenaline shot and said, okay, let's see how fast we can talk this morning. All right, calm down, Greg. Let's get to Shannon. She served her country in the Air Force. She swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And now Shannon Rice serves on the City Council of Milton, Florida. One voice, unwavering, still supporting and defending the Constitution against a wave of emergency declarations, lockdowns, and unlawful force. And all in support of the rights of her constituents and all Americans. She is Shannon Rice, and this is the Rice Report.
Good morning, Greg.
I think you better talk for a while. I think I've basically done a whole show's worth in 5 minutes.
Oh, wait a minute. I was waiting for you to tell me about Arizona.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about Arizona. This is fascinating. Christina Bob is my new hero. She is a dynamo. She's out there reporting for One American News. She does the weekend briefing or whatever it's called. She gets these real experts together. And I wish she was on every night. She deserves her own news show. And she's got this incredible history of working for government and Homeland Security and all kinds of other things. And you look at the people at One American News, and they're really quite fascinating. And what I love about this network is the fact that they're openly, you know, saying things like, well, Biden's a fraud. He shouldn't be there, you know. And it's fascinating to watch because every other network is like, well, the Biden administration reported today. And of course, there's a bunch of BS. There is no Biden administration. It's a fraud. So Christina Bob reporting from Arizona, you know, talks to all the folks that are running the Arizona audit. And then she has this, I'm looking for the video. I wish I could play it for you. But she basically said, we've caught him. You know, fraud's already emerged. We know they cheated. You know, and she's like, this administration's days are numbered. And she's just saying this openly, you know, like right on the briefing. This is like, you know, 4:45 this morning, just Central time, it'd be 4:06 East Coast time. But see if you can get the weekend briefing. I don't think they post it yet, but Christina Bob's, you know, final editorial comments. It's like they know they've lost. They're scurrying for power. They're scared to death. It's only a matter of time. Arizona's going to prove this is a fraud. They've already got evidence of fraud already, and they still have, like, you know, 4 or 5 weeks more to go on this. They're examining every single ballot of the 2,368,240, whatever it is. All right, they're going one by one. They're scanning them with ultraviolet light. They're looking at the fibers. They're looking at the, you know, the human oil in the hand. In other words, you know, like I said, the guy that's doing this, Pulitzer's a genius. All right. He was someone that was on, I watched the Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis hearings, right? When they went state to state, they went to Arizona, and they went to Michigan, they went to Wisconsin, they went to Pennsylvania and Georgia. And everybody was like, you know, oh, it's nothing. It doesn't mean anything. All the Marxists on all the other Facebook pages that I think shut me down again. I got 2 30-day suspensions now. Fortunately, they're running concurrently, as they say. So it's only going to be 6 weeks. You know, I've taken my Facebook page off public. It's not public anymore. It's only going to be for friends because I don't need to talk to those people. I don't need to talk to people who are going to shut me down. Screw you. I got stuff to do. I got work to do. I got people appreciate what we do here at Action Radio. Anyway, back to Arizona. So they're doing everything. And of course, the Democrats are running around like rats, you know, ready to, you know, try escaping a sinking ship, and they don't know what to do, right? So they're doing their lawsuits. They even, the judge that mandated this keep going, they got this sneaky little tactic where they hired a lawyer that used to clerk for the judge. So now the judge has to recuse himself. He's the one that kept the audit going. So now they got another judge. And hopefully, the judge shopping, right? So hopefully, this judge will keep the audit going too. I think the momentum is such that if they tried to shut it down now, Arizona would scream bloody murder. It's like, you can't do this. You know, we have to see the process through. Okay. Although, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm rambling. Just interrupt me. Yeah,
you're
ahead.
Talking so fast. Wait a minute. I just heard what you said. You said, who hired a clerk, a previous judge's clerk?
Oh, yeah. Let me get the article. Yeah. I've got a bunch of them here. Let me find my Gateway Pundit is the best source right now on what's happening with the elections. All right, let me find my Gateway Pundit thing. That was one of the problems. I was trying to organize all my articles this morning, and I'm hoping I didn't move them out of the way. This is that one. Where is it? Where's my Gateway articles? That's not the one.
Sorry, put you on the spot.
No, don't worry about it. No, I'll find. I've got them here. I just have to find.
Very
them.
Interesting.
Well, there's three of them. Where does it? Oh, here we go. Gateway Pundit. So I've got three articles here. I've got Arizona Republicans Strike Back, and we'll do that one next. We'll do these three right now. This is kind of cool. Where's the it's happening in Arizona election? Here we go. We'll start with this one. So this is Jim Joe Hoft. Joe Hoft is the twin brother of Jim Hoft. Those are the guys that run Gateway Pundit. Gateway Pundits, they're geniuses. I want to get them on the show. In fact, I got some contact information. I'll be talking to them probably tomorrow. All right. Arizona judge recuses himself from election audit case to be settled in the morning after Democrats shop around and hire new attorney who previously interned for the judge. Okay. So this is what Democrats do. They're all about power. They can't do anything honestly, so they have to cheat. And remember the show I did not too long ago?
I wouldn't call them little games at this point. This is
huge games. No, but the point, yeah, that's true. But the point is, their every day's lies have to be reinforced by the next day's lies. You know, oh, what a tangled web we weave when we practice to deceive. You know, or I've got to do something with election stolen. I got to kind of like work in a little poem here. But anyway, the point is that because they stole the election, everybody knows they stole the election. They have to bring about lies that actually look make it look like they didn't steal the election, even though we know they did. So this is why it's so fascinating. So every time something like this happens, when a judge says, okay, we're going to make this audit go forward, they have to come up with a new set of lies to try and stop it. The current ploy or the current way to go about that, well, let me just read you the article. It says, remember with Democrats, it's always about power, and they will do anything to obtain and keep it. Article says, this evening in Arizona, that'd be the 25th, so that would be 25th, that would have been yesterday, last night. He says that this evening in Arizona, the Maricopa County Superior Court Judge, Christopher Khoury, he's one of the good guys, who oversaw the case related to the Democrats' challenge to the audit currently going on in the county, recused himself from the case. And this is too bad. The reason is that the Democrats shopped around and found an attorney who interned with Judge Khoury and hired him. When the new attorney was introduced today for the first time, the judge was forced to resign from the case. Okay, so that's just pure, you know, criminal. I mean, yes, they can legally do it.
Doesn't that seem so crazy? You could do that with any case, any time. It seems that the judge could say, no, that you didn't have to hire that person.
One would think, I'll bet you it comes under defendants have the ability to hire the attorney of their choice. Okay. Now, I don't see why he had to recuse himself. So this is the person interned for him. So my question would be, you know, is this person, you know, going to try and unduly influence the case? And if so, maybe the attorney should recuse themselves. Why would you hire an attorney for an ongoing case? So the way I look at that, the judge was already on the case. You know, the Democrats did this specifically to sabotage the judge to get off the case. The judge could say, you know what, I'm not leaving. You know, under normal circumstances, if this attorney had been initially in the case, that might be different. But even so, if exactly your point too, is that if every time a case came up and someone who used to work for the judge was hired and that judge had to leave, no, that's crazy. But you'll notice it's only Republican judges that actually do this. Democrats wouldn't do it. The Democrat judge wouldn't recuse themselves. You know, in fact,
I hear it loud and clear, and I'm just like, okay, note to self.
Note to self what?
If I'm ever in court.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hire a judge. Hire a lawyer that used to work for the judge. Yeah. You know, so I don't think it's going to work. So we've got a tweet here from Rom Resnick. I'm not sure who it is. Breaking. Maricopa County Superior Judge Christopher Khoury recuses himself from legal challenge to Senate Republicans' election audit less than 24 hours before scheduling 11 a.m. hearing. Yeah. See, that's the problem. So they've kicked the judge, the good judge, off the case. And hopefully the next judge will be just as good, but there's no guarantee. So that's the problem. So Democrats, you know, obviously to maintain their stealing of the election, all right, they have to try and get rid of the judge that's keeping the audit going because they know the results of the audit. They're going to be found out for the frauds that they are. Apparently there's massive fraud, and they're just getting started. And the fraud in Arizona isn't anywhere near as bad as the fraud in Georgia. They think the fraud in Georgia is like 50 times worse. I was listening to that on One American News too. So this is a fascinating time. This is the most underreported, most critical story of our century, is the stealing of the election and the efforts to fix it. And it's the efforts to fix it that aren't being covered, as well as the stealing of the election. Anyway, I'm going to cover this in our election correction report, which I might do for the whole hour. Something tells me I have to do that on Wednesday. Yeah. Well, go to Gateway Pundit. And that's just one. So then let's talk about so then the next article is it's happening. Let me get this one. This is the 24th, so this was Saturday. Arizona election workers are running ultraviolet ballot testing on Maricopa ballots. Okay. This is Jim Hoft, brother of Joe. Jim is the editor. The Arizona Forensic Audit continued today at Veterans Memorial Coliseum in downtown Phoenix. In Arizona, for months, the Board of Supervisors in Maricopa County, some of which are Republican, okay, which is interesting because they're up to their ass in guilt as well. Okay, so did you see the post on my Facebook page? The Marxists are trying to destroy the country, the Patriots are trying to save the country, and the Republicans are waiting to see who wins.
Yeah, there's some problems.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Arizona, for months, the Board of Supervisors in Maricopa County have complained about calls for a forensic review of the ballots in that large and important county. Yeah, because they're all Democrat voters. The board members claim everything was fine, but they won't allow anyone to get close to their results. They spent weeks after the election messing with ballots before they formally concluded the election results. Yeah, they did fake audits. They did fraud audits. They did anything they could. They had injunctions. They had lawsuits. They're doing anything they can to stop this. Okay, so here's the latest. The latest is from Kelly Ward. So this is April 25th. This is yesterday afternoon. Arizona Republicans strike back. File motion of their own against state Democrats. Arizona GOP Chairwoman Kelly Ward, one of my other heroes, delivers update on Maricopa County forensic audit. So the Arizona Republican Party chair, the pro Trump chair, yeah, there we go, is the right person for the job as party leader in Arizona. Kelly Ward spoke about how Democrats went to court on Friday in their latest attempt to shut down the ballot audit. In a disgusting move, Democrats accused Republicans of recruiting hate groups to perform the audit. Oh, yeah, right. What do you mean, like Americans? The court did not accept their bogus argument. According to Ward, the Arizona Supreme Court weighed in on the latest challenge by Democrats and also allowed the audit to keep going. So there's one judge and there's the Supreme Court. And I think the Supreme Court would overrule any if the new judge sucks, if the new judge is like a Democrat plant judge that they shopped around for, getting rid of Cooey, the good judge, then the Arizona Supreme Court can still say, you suck. The audit's going forward. That's what I'm hoping. So the article says next week, the Arizona Supreme Court will rule on a motion brought by the Arizona Senate that the courts do not have the authority to infringe upon the Senate's ability to manage the audit as they see fit, and that any civil action by the Democrats to stop the audit through continued court action crosses the line of separation of powers afforded by the United States Constitution. In other words, it doesn't matter what the Democrats do in court, the courts don't have jurisdiction. So even though they shopped around for a judge, got rid of another judge, it doesn't matter. That's if this goes through. Isn't this fun?
Well, you know, I always like to focus in on local government and the importance of local government, and this just comes back to the importance of your supervisor of elections. I mean, those elections aren't usually a very big deal, but we need to make a bigger deal out of those elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing to come out of this is that all elections count. School board counts. City council counts. County supervisor counts enormously. The more local the government, the more effect you have. So my question, I was thinking about this morning, would you or one of the or a bunch of folks be interested on the city council in introducing a resolution in support of the audit for election integrity? You don't even have to take a position. Just say, we support audits to make sure that elections are fair and honest. So we support the Arizona audit. Would you guys do something like that? No one else has.
Well, I can't speak for the rest of the council as far as what
they I'm asking, would you maybe consider introducing such a resolution to the Milton City Council?
You don't have
to answer me now.
Yeah, I mean, I would. I just need to get more information about it to and see. I just have to tell you, it's hard for me to get support for some of these things from the rest of the council that I think are no-brainers. but, we've had some changes in the council, so I don't know.
The motion itself,
I can bring it up. It's just I seem to bring up things lately that aren't getting a lot of traction. Unfortunately, I hate to say that.
Keep bringing them up anyway. Keep bringing them up anyway. Listen, remember, all the people that told me Action Radio was a crazy idea, we're making some real headway here. There's a lot of people taking notice of what we're doing as a citizen legislature. So all those folks, I'm going to be like going, in their faces.
Well, next meeting, I am bringing back. I get the support that I need for a resolution to support HB 123, which was constitutional carry in the state of Florida, but I am bringing support of this back in a different form and asking for a resolution. So that'll be at the next meeting. And I think that's really important as far as something along the lines of there's another bill, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but it is one where it would be illegal to
enforce any of the new, they're not, I wouldn't say they're laws, but federal regulations.
Oh, the executive orders? Yeah.
Excuse me. The executive orders? Infringe on the Second Amendment.
Take a look at our Action Radio gun page. I just found an article not too long. One of the governors. I want to go to Parler. This is where I post. If you folks want to know, you know, the good stuff, you know, there's a tremendous amount of my friends posting incredible articles on my Facebook page. But as you know, Facebook is censored, you know, by the Chinese Communist Party, so you don't really get a lot of the good information, and by Dr. Fascist and his minions, you know, that want to lie to you about COVID. Okay, so if you want the stories that actually, you know, that you can't post there, go to my Parler account at Greg Penglis. And so I found, let me find the governor who did this. Here we go. Montana governor signs law prohibiting enforcement of federal gun bans to protect constituents from, you know, and that's where it leaves off. But anyway, basically from enforcing, you know, federal unconstitutional gun laws. It's Gateway Pundit, but it's on my Parler page at Greg Penglis. So if you go there, scroll down a little bit, you'll see the friendly governor, you know, with the big blue sign behind him. And there's the article. So maybe that would be a basis.
Yeah, I'm sure that
a model for you. Yeah.
I wish I could think the name of it, but I'm sure that that's similar to what that bill is that's in the works right now. So that'll come up at the next meeting.
Okay. Your phone's occasionally distorting just a little tiny bit.
That.
I was just saying your phone's distorting a little
that
tiny
that
bit.
We showed
yeah.
you.
Go ahead.
I missed what you said.
Oh, no, there we go. No,
I
yeah,
said
your phone.
Think,
you first.
I was just saying, I think that it's important that we show that we support that even at this local level. And I think all the cities and the counties need to make it known when they support these bills that are important.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that Milton can make national news. If you remember when the city council declined to have a mask mandate and all the Marxist minions of COVID conspiracy, you know, went crazy. So how can you not have a mask mandate? You know, you're going to kill grandma. Well, grandma's doing just fine, thank you. You know, and so are the people in Florida and the people in Texas and the other states, which don't have the lockdowns and mask mandates, which apparently are making things worse for people. You know, if you want to look where the highest cases are, it's the most restrictive states. So doesn't that tell you something? What's that definition of insanity? Repeating the same thing and expecting a different result. Okay. So you folks out there in California and Michigan and New York that are allowing your states to continue these lockdowns and making yourself sicker, you know, that is the definition of insanity. So not only are you going to get, not only is COVID being passed around more, but so is brain damage. So do something about it. I'm so glad.
Well, did you see the there was video that I saw this weekend? I think it was London, big thousands of people marching opposed to mandatory vaccines, opposed to track and trace, all of that.
What's track and trade?
It's got, well, I think that's what they're calling that where they can tell where you are, like by your phone and stuff. Remember when they were doing that?
App.
Like if you've been in an area where somebody had COVID.
Oh yeah, that whole contact tracing thing—that was all about monitoring where you are. I mean, I've got to get a really good psychologist on at some point to find out what this obsession with control of the left is to want to know where you are, where you're going, what you're thinking, how you're exercising freedom. Why does freedom scare these people so much? Why are they so bothered if I want to drive a car, you know, with the windows down, loudly singing country music out the window? Why is that a problem for people? I don't care what they do. If they want to hold up in their houses in fear and be paranoid and read Marx, you know, read the Communist Manifesto every day, I don't care. I mean, I don't want them voting because they're, you know, going to destroy the country. But, I mean, I'm not going to stop them. I'm just saying, you know, I don't care what they do. Why do they care what we do?
You know, I can only think that it must also have something to do with marketing and advertising and somehow tracking what your habits are is the only thing I can think of.
Well, Facebook does that.
I remember, yeah, but you remember 20 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago, when they were asking for your phone number at the register and people thought it was no big deal and all these different things that were tracking you were no big deal. Mm-hmm. Because we couldn't even imagine what they would be used for, really. But it is a big deal for these companies. So I don't know why they would want to do facial recognition and things where you are at the time. I mean, I'd be boring. I don't know why anybody's going to know where I'm at, what I'm doing.
I mean, a lot of it's marketing, a lot of it's convenience if you deal with a regular store. You know, like I do a lot of music stuff, so it's convenient for me for them to know who I am and you know, if I want to get packages or things like that. So that actually makes sense. But every store asking for my phone number, no, screw you. I mean, that's why we have cash. Yeah. If you give credit, then yes, they have to know because credit's a different thing. But if you're dealing in cash, then you're walking with cash. They don't have to know who you are. That's crazy. You know, so yeah, most of it's just for marketing, you know, purposes. And they're, I mean, Facebook, you know, basically you pay for Facebook with your personal information. I mean, they sell that. That's how they make money, you know. And as long as everybody understands that, that's the contract. So they can't, you know, put a gun to your head and make you reveal everything. You know, they can only take what you put on there. But most people are so willing to put it on that they have just incredible access and they can put things together. Same thing with those genetic things, you know, ancestry and all that kind of stuff. A lot of that stuff ends up with the government. You know, and people have been convicted of crimes. It's like, oh, we know what this DNA is because they cross-reference it with criminals. So it's like, there you are. You know, so it's like, that's whose DNA that is. You know, so I mean,
need to have to hire a previous clerk of the judge to represent you, and you could get any judge on it ultimately. Right.
See, that's new. I haven't heard of that. Yeah, I haven't heard that tactic before, and I don't know why that is. I mean, is it just that the Democrats are saying? Well, I mean, I'm surprised the judge recused himself because it really was a problem because it was so obvious that was done specifically. They didn't need that attorney. They hired that attorney only because he interned for the judge. But if you got rid of everybody that ever worked for you, does that mean that Trump, when he became president? And still is, by the way, folks. I don't care what they say. You know, does that mean Trump couldn't work with you know, anybody in his family because they used to work with him or work for him? Does that mean, you know, worldwide Trump employees are off the market for serving in the administration? That'd be stupid. Yeah. Anyway, I've never seen a case
There must be more to it.
Well, it's too bad he refused himself so quickly. You know,
maybe particular work. There was kind of employment situation between the clerk and the judge, but still, it doesn't mean that you should be able to hire someone to run off the judge.
Mm-hmm. Well, they hired this person because they were losing. You know, the judge was keeping the audit going. Now the audit's still going, and according, it looks like from what Kelly Ward was saying that the audit's going to keep going. I don't think there's any danger of that audit stopping. It's too far along. It's already begun. So if nothing else, but it's what the Democrats are always calling, well, it's an ongoing investigation. We can't tell you what's happening, but we're going to keep it going. You know, or as Nancy Pelosi said, well, how do you know anything until you investigate? So in other words, she'll start an investigation with no evidence whatsoever, keep it going with no evidence whatsoever, and draw her own conclusions, previous conclusions, again, with no evidence whatsoever. So at least with this, we've got evidence. You know, we've got already fraud. They can already establish fraud. The only question now is how much fraud. That's why it's so fascinating.
Well, so let me tell you real quick about what's going on at the city of Milton.
Please do.
2 minutes. So we have a workshop regarding the wastewater plant location coming up May 8th. And then because some people are disputing where we have planned to locate it, so we're going to talk all about the location and the wastewater treatment plant facility. And then we also recently had some proposals submitted for development of the marina area. There's an area down by, there's some land that we have down by the marina. And let's see, you know, the mayor's trying to introduce rules for our meeting again. This will be the third time. I don't know how it'll go. I don't think we need any more rules. It's just a way to try to control and try to shut some of us down that don't agree with her. But those are the big things.
Well, that sounds familiar. That's like the Democrats in Arizona. You know, they don't want the audit, so they make up new rules. Yeah, it's like, well,
if you want to know when our meetings are, it's our city website is miltonfl.org.
Okay.
I did it in a minute.
You did, yeah. It's great. Take a look at your phone, though, just because, like I say, it's getting a little warbly occasionally. We're missing like a word here and there, and I definitely don't want to do that. I got one last topic before – actually, I got several before Dr. Pry gets here. But are you as excited as I am with what's going on with SpaceX and the fact that we have a space program? I'm surprised Biden hasn't shut it down, saying it's not equitable for because not everybody can go into space, or you know, we don't have enough minority representation in space, which of course they do, you know. But I'm excited. I used to watch rockets. I remember, sorry how old I am. I used to watch the Gemini rockets. I was too young for the Mercury capsules, but I watched Gemini. And I remember the spacewalks, and I remember Apollo, and I watched the landing on the moon live. I was there, in Australia, but yeah. So this for kids, this was great. And whereas kids in the 40s and 50s was airplanes. In the 50s and 60s, it was rockets, and kids were just love this kind of stuff. And I think during the socialist years of Obama and Clinton, and Bush even, we lost our ambition. Dr. Pry's on the line too, so I'm sure he may comment on this as well. But we lost our romance for space and our romance for the air and the idea that anybody could be a pilot or an astronaut. We need that as a nation. And the fact that these guys are going into space is wonderful. And the fact that NASA, I don't know what they're doing, but it'd be nice if they did it, but I'm perfectly happy with SpaceX. If these guys can get their rockets together, get these things blasted off, and I want to see one land. They've actually got a way to land them, just like we watched Flash Gordon, way back when, in fact, even before my time, and so there's some fascinating things happening with space. But are you as excited as I am, and do you see any kids that going, wow, we're in space. This is really cool.
I'm not even around many kids, but I think all children should grow up thinking they can do anything, they can be anything, they can go anywhere. So all of that has to be positive in the end.
Did you watch rockets and things like that when you were a kid? Because you were in the Air Force. Did you follow the space program, or, did you want to fly jets or any of that kind of stuff? Just curious.
When I was young, no, not a lot.
Okay.
I was playing in the woods, running around, playing football with the neighbor kids, those kind of things. I was outside all the time.
Oh, okay. Because I knew I wanted to fly airplanes from the time I was 5 years old. And I need to get back into it. It's been way too long on the ground. Ground's not fun. I mean, my home is in the air. I mean, that's where I feel the most comfortable. If I could live up there and broadcast from up there, I would certainly do so. All right, let me let you go. We've got a bunch of stuff going on. I've got Dr. Pry on the line, and I want to find out. He's got several topics, and so we want to get to them because we never have enough time. We just don't. It's just impossible to do what we need to do. So thank you. Watch the election correction. Watch what's going on in Arizona. And if you guys can, and the Milton City Council can have some kind of a resolution, you be the first. I don't know anybody that's supporting what's going on in Arizona, outside Arizona, but they need support. So let me know if that's possible, please.
Well, that's awesome. I'll look into it more. You put me on the spot here, Greg.
You can always say, just tell me. Say, I have to get your political hat on. I have to study the issue. I'll get back to you.
I personally agree, but I have to think about how that would go along with the city council. So you got me thinking about it.
That's all I want. I'm not demanding an answer. I just wanted to my goal was to get you to think about it, and then next week you can tell me what you think. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my job.
Okay.
Thank you, Shannon.
All right.
We'll
thank
do next
you.
Week.
Y'all have a good day.
See, you come on the show, you never know what to expect. It's just, this is the way it works. Shannon Rice is on the Milton City Council. Let's get to Dr. Pry now. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How Much National Security is Enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Yeah, I think I better hang back here. I sort of took a little too much of Shannon's report, but Dr. Pry, you've got a wealth of topics, and as usual, only so much time to do them. So good morning, sir. Where would you like to take us this morning?
Well, I'd like to focus on talking about the fate of the ICBM. You know, the struggle has been joined. You know, I wrote articles and reports last year at the end of the Trump administration warning that the Democrats and the left would try to get rid of our ICBMs, to ban our ICBMs, which are crucial to the nuclear deterrent. And the battle is now being engaged in Congress, you know, over that. And the Democrats' political base basically is trying to get rid of it, and their leaders in the Congress. But before we go there, I just wanted to, I'd like to talk about some of the people who are being appointed by the Biden administration to run the Pentagon, you know, because this too is almost as important, maybe arguably as important as the ICBM. In terms of our national security. I'm looking at the Assistant Secretary of Defense positions. I mean, the so-called ASDs, people who really do the heavy lifting and implement, you know, the policies of every administration. They're the ones who do the work. And we rarely hear about them, you know, but as a person who has, you know, served on congressional commissions and, you know, work closely with the intelligence and defense communities, you know, the Assistant Secretary of Defense, you know, basically they're the ones who actually run the Pentagon, you know, and translate policy into actions. And here's just some examples of I just want to talk about three or four of the Biden administration appointees, you know, that are nominated that will be, you know, in charge. Before we go to the ICBMs, Brenda Sue Fulton is going to be the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, part of the first West Point graduating class to include women. Fulton has a long history of fighting for LGBTQ rights in the military. She helped lead efforts to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy and fought against the ban on transgender service members. And in 2012, she and her wife were the first same-sex couple to wed in West Point's Cadet Chapel. So she's going to be in charge of manpower and reserve affairs. You know, and
that's
so in
insane.
Other words, well, yeah.
That's
so you've basically
nuts.
Got basically a gay activist, you know,
right.
In charge of manpower and reserve affairs. In the middle of a Biden administration, you know, that is trying to purge the ranks of people of traditional values and conservative views, which comprises the large majority of the rank and file in military. And by the way, as I read each of these names and their backgrounds, you know, just think about those political generals we've got in charge of the Pentagon now. Where are they, you know, to defend the troops? Well, I would expect the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to protest this sort of thing, to tender their resignation, because, you know, sure as shooting, what's going to happen with somebody like Brenda Sue Fulton as the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs? She's the perfect person for implementing, you know, the commissar-type policies that the Biden administration has in mind to root out, you know, those potential domestic violent extremists, so-called, that exist within military ranks, people who don't sign on to the far-left, gay, everything agenda, okay? And so that's what that's about. I mean, that is insane, you know? Even if this Brenda Sue Fulton is a nice person, and, which probably, you know, she may well be. You know, I wouldn't mind having dinner with Brenda Sue Fulton, okay? But her value system, you know, represents 1%, 2% of the population, and her political values clearly are not focused on, making the military the best that it can be for fighting wars. Fighting wars. That's what the job of the military is. It's not to serve as a laboratory experiment, you know, to see how far we can push our society in the gay rights direction, especially in the part of our society that has tended to be the most patriotic, the most traditional value, you know, the most religiously fundamental part of our system, you know, which is the rank and file soldiers who fight and win our wars. So that's one nominee. Deborah,
I got a comment on that if you want to move on.
Please do. Yes.
Well, here's the problem is that the military, as I understand it, should not have this kind of politics in it. The whole point of the military is to get away from this kind of politics. And if you're talking LGBTQ rights, those are special rights for people that have a political agenda. Those aren't universal American rights. They're not universal rights of individuals. They're not Bill of Rights. They're not the general welfare. It's special. You know, it's special to a group that has a political agenda, and that political agenda has no business in the military whatsoever, neither does she. There's no reason for her to be there. She's obviously got her own personal agenda, which is fine, but you can't do it from within the military. You can be an activist or you can serve in the military, but you can't do both. You can't be an activist for special causes. And, I don't want to stop any gay activists from being gay activists. That's fine. But don't do it within the military, because the military's job is to protect this country. Okay. And you've got, I've had soldiers on. I've had, we do a Concerned Veterans for America report. Jimmy Smith is on. He's a combat veteran. I have a couple combat veterans actually on the show. And the one thing they keep telling me over and over again, this is the military, you know, you put aside your background, your skin color, your religion. It doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters. You're counting on each other to save each other's lives in combat situations, and none of this has anything to do with a political agenda. So that is the worst possible place to have one, are the people that are counting on each other. This is division, and the last thing you want in the military is division. There was a Marine commandant not that long ago who came out against women serving in the military. I think the Marines were the only branch of the service that said, no, you know, we're not going to have women in frontline combat positions, and here's why. And there were very good reasons. Is that discriminatory? Yes. And why was it discriminatory? Because it's good for the country to discriminate in that way, you know, with frontline combat troops for the Marines. That's what they determined. You know, you're not guaranteed to serve. You know, I was wearing glasses at 19. That means, you know, I couldn't fly jet fighters, which I think I'm fully capable of doing. But I wasn't qualified because I couldn't meet the physical qualifications. Is that discrimination? No. You don't want people with glasses ejecting out of airplanes. Okay. So they determined I wasn't qualified. That's fine. That's life. In the same way, political considerations. If you're LGBTQ and you're a political activist and you want to bring that to the military, to me that's disqualification. Because now you're not serving the military. You're not serving the nation. You're serving your political interest, which is fine, but not within the military. It has to be outside it. This person, you know, Brenda Sue Fulton has no business anywhere near the military if she wants to be an activist.
I agree completely with everything that you said. And not only does she have having anything to do with the military, does she have any right or purpose and would be counterproductive to the traditional colorblind, you know, sexual orientation blind, which I disagree with, by the way. I mean, that's Trump wanted to change that. I don't think we should be blind to the sexual orientation. I do think that undermines morale and capabilities. And there has been an extremely historically, an extremely high correlation. I mean, the people who tend to end up betraying our country and giving away secrets overwhelmingly tend to have sexual orientation problems, you know, like this. But anyway,
I don't think being gay disqualifies you from serving at all. I think being a gay activist does. So this is the distinction I make. Who you are is who you are, you know, and you bring who you are to the military.
We'll agree to disagree there. We'll agree that being a gay activist. Yeah, absolutely. You know, up until when I was in the, it was the Clinton administration, up until the Clinton administration, it was automatically disqualifying if you were gay to serve in the CIA, for example, or in the intelligence community.
Because it was
automatically disqualifying, just like, you know, as if you had been a drug addict or if you were an alcoholic, it would be automatically disqualified. And I think that that's absolutely right, you know.
Yes, I would disagree with you there. Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, you're wrong.
Okay.
You know, because when go back and you look at the history of who are the people, you know, who have tended to betray our secrets and done tremendous damage to our national security, you know, overwhelmingly, like from the beginning of the Cold War, you know, the first notorious spy ring, you know, that came out of Oxford, overwhelmingly, I mean, out of disproportion to their population. I think, you know, I think it's something like 2% of the population is supposed to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's something like 50% of the people who end up betraying national secrets have been gay.
Yeah.
And that continues until Bradley Manning should be a poster child for this.
Okay.
This transgender person, this is one of the most recent people who's done enormous damage to national security. But, you know, nobody has a right, you know, to serve in the military. Nobody has a right to serve in the intelligence community. And the government has a responsibility to weed out, you know, people who are high risk in terms of either betraying their country or if they're not traitors, okay, if they have some, you know, physical disadvantage, all right, that puts us at risk, which unfortunately, being a woman, when it comes to combat, is definitely the case. And it's, you know, but we could have a whole discussion just on that, you know.
Yeah,
World War II, if you were over, I think if you were over 6'6" or something like that, if you were male, you know, you'd say, oh, that guy would be a great warrior. And in a classical world, he would have been, you know, a great warrior. But that would have been physically disqualifying, you know, because you stand out on the battlefield and you're likely to be killed. You know, same thing. People don't think through, well, what are the implications, not of just putting women in combat positions, all right? I don't like the fact that women occupy so many positions in our military. We haven't had a fight, a big, serious war in a long time. And psychologically, you know, our generals, the Pentagon, and our political leaders need to think through the implications of what they do, you know, when they so sexually integrate the military so that we've got so many women in there. You know, it's not just the case we mostly talk about, you know, not being able to carry a wounded man, you know, that the difference in terms of your physical ability, and that is certainly legitimate criticism. But there's other things. You know, the kinds of adversaries that we fight. If you're a woman and you get taken POW, you know, you are not going to be treated like the men. You know, you are going to be raped. You know, you are going to be tortured. That's going to be done in front of the men to try to break their spirit. And we're actually trying to psychologically condition our soldiers to be okay with that, so that if women are captured and taken prisoner and they're tortured, that they can be indifferent to that or tolerate that. And that is just so screwed up, you know, to compromise our necessary, normal, natural concerns for women's safety, the respect that we have for women, in the interests of advancing the LGBTQ women's rights agenda in the military, you know. Really disadvantages us. And how are the American people? How, you know, suppose you're fighting some war overseas, like one of these, maybe another one of these forever wars that we shouldn't be involved in. I mean, if you're going to get in a war, you should win the war, all right? But it puts us at a great psychological disadvantage if the adversaries can capture women as prisoners, American women as prisoners. Are we really prepared as a society, you know, to know, oh, geez, we see large numbers of our women being raped, tortured, whatever. What are the implications of that going to be? You know, it may not seem fair, but we're used to men being killed in combat. We're used to men being tortured by the enemy, okay? It doesn't move us to necessarily escalate to the nuclear level when that happens. That comes with the price of being a man. It comes with the price of traditional classical warfare. Throwing women into the mix is not advisable. But anyway, I'm more conservative on these things than you are. But,
technology is changing a lot of that, too. There are women combat pilots, and there are women doing all kinds of things. And as a flight instructor, I taught women how to fly. I had a disproportionate number of women students because I treated everybody the same. And I noticed some very interesting things in training women to fly. And it was fascinating. They would listen more, trust me more, and learn faster than the guys. The guys are more arrogant, more bullheaded, and would resist more because they think they know better. But on the other side, the flip side of the coin is that women would also give up easier. They would ask for help sooner. They would, which sometimes can be a good thing, but not necessarily, depending on the situation. The guys would gut it out longer. They would work harder to find the solution. They would struggle more with whatever dilemma I had given them to try and resolve it themselves. I mean, they could always ask for help, but the thing is, that was part of the test to see how far would you go. And I brought every student to basically a breaking point just so they knew what it was. You know, and I knew what it was too. So I'd overload them, and the guys would generally overload more and take on more stress and gut it through than women, except for one, who was a combat trauma nurse. And that was the toughest woman I've ever met in my life, and probably my best student, because she would go through anything. And if I ever was in a military hospital, she would be the one I'd want, you know, to first handle me as an injured, you know, soldier. But I think that it really depends on the job. As we've talked about, nobody has a right to serve. The military is not a place where you exercise your rights. Individual rights are exercised privately. But I think there are more and more jobs like drone pilot, which can be done from, you know, a computer in Ohio, and you can be in Afghanistan. So the technology is changing that, whereas I think it makes sense to have all male units on the front lines in the absolute, you know, worst conditions. You know, maybe it would make sense to have all women units at some point in some place. I don't know. That's not my call. Fortunately, I leave that to the military experts to do that. But as long as you realize, not you specifically, but as long as we realize there's no right to serve and the best people need to be in the best positions. And like you say, if you're over 6'6", you wouldn't have fit in a World War II airplane. You wouldn't. I've been in those bombers. I've crawled in them. There's no room if you're that tall. You know, I sat in the back of a B-25, you know, flying backwards down Pensacola Beach. And there's not a lot of room in there. And so there are physical limitations to everything. And one of the other limitations is your political ideology. If your ideology dominates and so dominates your ability to without mental reservation or purpose of evasion, swear absolute allegiance to defending the Constitution of the United States, you're not eligible to serve. It's that simple. Your ideology cannot dominate your allegiance to the United States and to the Constitution. That's where I draw the line.
Right. Or if you have some twisted interpretation of upholding the Constitution of the United States as being consistent with advancing the LGBTQ agenda, mm-hmm. and imposing that on interpreting everybody who rejects it as the, as not supporting the Constitution, you know, mm-hmm. which is what I strongly suspect is going to be the case with Brenda Sue Fulton, you have no purpose serving as well. But, you know, on this point, before moving on, I think we're almost out of time. I never even got to the I should be up.
Issue well than to cover five issues badly. I still believe that. I think we've covered this very well because this applies to so many different areas. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, as long as we're still on the issue, before I move on to the next name, I'd just like to add a thought to this, all right, mm-hmm. in terms of my own thinking. You know, if you think of war as a chess game, all right, you're the general. That's how I think of it. I think of, you know, we're going to ask our generals to fight a war. We're going to ask our soldiers to fight a war. We want to maximize their ability to win that war. Mm-hmm. And if we're fighting the war, presumably it's crucial to our interests that we prevail. So you want to do everything possible to assure yourself that you prevail. And you don't want, one of the things that can undermine us, one of the disadvantages that we have as a system, is we're usually going up against, in the modern era, we're always going up against totalitarian or authoritarian systems that don't share our values. And one of our Achilles' heels is our own politics, our own domestic politics, can be one of the biggest disadvantages that we have when it comes to our generals and our troops. It's why we lost the Vietnam War, for example. You know, it's why we had to fight the Korean War to a stalemate. Our domestic politics, have been a disadvantage and crippled us from a strictly military standpoint. It's the price we pay for being a free people.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
Let me finish. I want to minimize the disadvantage there. And so you're for putting female pilots out there. I'm not, you know.
Okay.
I'm very concerned, you know, about, you know, a pilot getting shot down and captured by the enemy, and then what the implications of that are for American morale on the home front, for the ability of our generals and our troops to win our wars. You know, it's women love that idea. Oh, we're going to be women fighter pilots and all of that. But people don't think through the implications of what that means for your ability to prosecute the war if that person, for example, is taken prisoner and the bad guys decide to exploit that psychologically. I remember, even when men, it's very dangerous for a democracy, you know, for the whole war to be focused on a particular personality or a particular incident that can undermine their morale. And this almost happened, for example, during the Balkans War. You know, there was an American pilot shot down. And, in fact, I think he was flying a stealth fighter.
Yep, and then
there was a whole movie made about that because everybody was so focused on, are we going to save the pilot? What's going to happen to the pilot? Now, he was a male pilot, all right, but even though he was a male pilot and we're used to men making these sacrifices in war, nonetheless, that became such a focus. I wonder what would have happened if the Serbs have gotten hold of him, you know, and tortured him and killed him. It would have been tremendously demoralizing and probably might have undermined, you know, the war effort. And just you can multiply that by 10 if it's a woman pilot. But anyway, that's my last comment. You can have the last word on it if you like.
Well, I was thinking that women have been in combat for years. You know, you look at medical units. If you had a helicopter with a female nurse on board that was shot down, she could be taken prisoner too. So it really depends on the job and where you are. And in war, you know, really bad stuff happens. And so it can happen to anybody that's anywhere near close to it. So I think it depends on the pilot. I think as long as the qualifications are set and if the military, if a branch determines that they can only have male pilots for the job, I don't have a problem with that, okay, because they knocked me out for eyesight. So, you know, sex is a qualification just as eyesight is a qualification, as height is a qualification. The physical requirements, and if one of the physical requirements is being male for a particular job, then if the military determines that, they get to do that. They're in charge of defending the nation, of course, under civilian control, but that's how that works. But just to disqualify women from all jobs, you know, that can be done in the military, that doesn't make sense. So, they got, you know,
well,
it's individual basis.
Not what I'm arguing. I just want to make sure the audience understands that. I'm not arguing disqualifying women from all jobs. You know, in World War II, we had women and all. I'd be fine with having women, you know, doing all kinds of other jobs that support the combat troops. You know, as long as it's a non-combat position, I'm fine with, you know, but I am so old-fashioned that I don't like having a sexually integrated military. I would go back to having women in their own separate services, because this idea about throwing people 20s together, you know, when they're at the height of their physical and sexual attractiveness and is causing all kinds of problems with morale and
love boat. love
yeah,
boat in the
exactly.
Navy.
Even among high-ranking officers. You know, one of the accomplishments of the Biden administration is that for the first time, we're now having a general. An Air Force general, for the first time in history, is now going to be be court-martialed for sexual harassment. Okay, you know,
male or female?
You know, oh, it's a male, of course. You know,
females can be court-martialed for sexual harassment too. I have to interrupt you. We got Pianca in the line, and I want to get him before you if you have to go. Just because this is going to be a great discussion. Pianca, you're on with Dr. Peter Pry.
You know, Peter makes a good observation. during World War II in the Pacific against Japan, you had pilots that had planes that had to ditch two-man pilots. The Japanese would roll out and bring the pilots back to the ship, torture them, tie ropes to them, weigh them down, and dump them off into the ocean.
Yeah.
And, you know, that way they kill. So that is a possibility. It's going to be interesting if we get into that type of war. You know, there was a movie called Up Periscope. It was about a submarine captain that they gave a whole diesel submarine in order to show that Russia could pull into Charleston Bay using something like that because it wouldn't detect it. They had a female on board the submarine, and she was the, you know, the person that directed the navigation of the sub. And she got through a case where she got scared. But in the long run, the captain was
losing. Nope, we're losing you. We got most of that, but yeah, there was. I'm just trying to think of well, the comment I was going to make earlier is that, and I agree with Dr. Pry on this, that if you have all guys together, Yankees drop, in a unit, you know, they're going to be concentrating on the job. I know in my 20s, if I had a bunch of hot women, you know, I don't care what I was supposed to be doing, I'd be concentrating on the hot women as well as the job. So there's where the distraction comes in. I'm sure the women are concentrating on the guys too and be distracted from their job. So if you're with a bunch of grimy guys, you're going to do the mission. You know, and so I absolutely agree that there are places for same-sex units and guy units. That just makes perfect sense. But again, throughout the military, you kind of just, you know, go individually with it. Let's take a few more minutes. Let's get another, you know, one or two people of the Biden disasters, and then I want to get onto the vaccine bill of rights. Totally different subject for today, for the second hour. Dr. Pry?
Oh yes, I thought you were talking about. Okay, the next one.
Who else is in our hit parade?
Number two.
Yeah,
the Assistant Secretary, Deborah Rosenblum, is going to be the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense. Now, this is really crucial, okay? This is the person who's going to decide about EMP protection, for example.
Oh.
You know, our EMP commission had to work with, we ended up fighting with the Obama administration, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense. You know, under the Obama administration, the person who was in charge of that department ended up sabotaging the EMP commission and holding back our money, holding back our clearances. But basically, you know, if you want to have our troops and our country, our military infrastructures protected against EMP, against any kind of nuclear, chemical, or biological threat, it's Deborah Rosenblum who's going to be doing it.
Hmm.
And
what are her qualifications?
Rosenblum is currently executive vice president of the Nuclear Threat Initiative, you know, which is a nonprofit which is dedicated to nuclear disarmament.
Oh, great.
You know, it's an agent, right? You know, she previously served as the vice president of the Cohen Group Consultancy. Over the course of her career, she focused heavily on nuclear issues, including multiple rounds of negotiations with North Korea. Okay, so she was one of the Obama administration people who basically gave us the catastrophic, you know, deals with North Korea that didn't work. And she joins a group of non-proliferation experts. That's a polite phrase for anti-nuclear people, okay, that have been tapped by the administration for top nuclear jobs. And joining with one of these other people is a person named Jill Ruby. You know, and she's going to head the National Nuclear Security Administration. The National Nuclear Security Administration used to be run in the end of the Trump administration by my friend Lisa Gordon Haggerty, you know, who is an example, so everybody will know I'm not a misogynist, okay, who I think was one of the best possible person to run the National Nuclear Security Administration. You know, she was an expert on nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons design. She understood, you know, that we needed to modernize our nuclear weapons, and she's the first person that actually introduced a plans for a design of a new nuclear weapon, not an old nuclear weapon based on the old designs that had been come up with during the Cold War, because all we've got are old-fashioned nuclear weapons right now, not just based on old designs, but the actual old nuclear weapons that were built during the Cold War, designed during the Cold War. We've just been patching them up together. And when Lisa was the head of the NNSA, she had joined me. She was a very active member of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum that I used to run. And when she became the head, the chief of the National Nuclear Security Administration, it's her that we owe for introducing a plan to develop a brand new nuclear weapon for the first time that was of new design and new manufacture. Now, the Democrats are trying to kill that, too. And Jill Ruby is just in the opposite direction. Her whole life has basically been dedicated to trying to nuclear disarmament, trying to disarm nuclear weapons. And she is the person who's in charge of the National Nuclear Security Administration.
Yeah.
So that's just...
This seems very much of an Obama, running the everything from behind the scenes. I remember when Biden, used the word Taliban exactly as Obama would pronounce it. I went, aha, Obama's coaching this guy directly. He has no basis of what's going on. And this is typical of the Obama administration, where nobody in it actually was interested in helping the United States. Their sole purpose was fundamentally transforming us into some kind of Islamo-Marxist, subservient state of the global world order. I mean, that's their goal. I don't think there's anybody that you've mentioned that's going to be good for this country. I don't think there's anybody that the Biden administration could appoint that would be actually good for this country. And it makes sense because they're an outlaw administration. They have no legal basis to be there. And if you've stolen power, there's no limit to what you will do. If there's no limits on what you think you can get away with, then they can put all these people in and all their private agendas in the worst possible places. And if the worst happens, they don't care, because it's worth it to risk it for their ideology, because their ideology governs. So my last question
almost,
is, go ahead.
This almost makes me wish that Obama was back, okay? Because I don't think Obama is actually behind these choices. This is far worse than we had in Obama, or maybe he is. I don't know. When the Obama administration was around, they had a few of these tokens to the left, and to the sexually screwed up and everything. But person after person, that is coming up here, has got backgrounds with what used to be. If they're not sexually twisted, okay, they've got backgrounds with former anti-nuclear groups which are little more than communist front organizations, like Council for World Peace, for example. One of the nominees, I don't remember that name, but there's which was founded by the KGB early in the Cold War. It's one of the oldest communist front groups, and that person is going to have a role in the State Department. Here's a last one that I'll mention in terms of the people. Sean Skelly is going to be the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Readiness. Okay. Again, what a really important role. This is the person that determines how ready is the Air Force, how ready are the Marines and the Navy. Will they have ammunition? Are the planes going to be able to fly? Are they going to be ready for combat? That's the job of this Sean Skelly person. And this Skelly did spend 20 years in the Navy. So that's to her advantage. Again, it's another woman. But the Navy is not mainly what she's been about. Until recently, she's going from being the former commissioner on the National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service, all right, and vice president of the OUT in the National Security Group. So it's another gay activist thing, and Skelly became the first transgender veteran to serve as a presidential appointee in 2013. So that is during the Obama administration. So there's some empirical evidence that maybe you're right about these being Obama appointees. Okay. But here's a transgender activist, whose chief job has been to push transgender issues through these national commissions that were established by Obama and by other groups like OUT in National Security Group. The purpose of the OUT in National Security Group is to identify gay people, transgender people, whatever, who haven't come out, but to expose them, to out them, all right, so that we can see that, oh, look, people that we thought, for whatever reason, they want to help them. But that's the person that's going to be the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Readiness. And those are, those are four people who really, I think, have no business, being in Assistant Secretary of Defense positions. In fact, if I was Russia or China and I wanted to choose people who are going to be counterproductive, to these positions, they're exactly the kind of people I would choose,
That's why Putin's on the Ukraine border and China's looking to stir up trouble wherever they can, and all these other things are happening, and China's lecturing us saying, you've got Black Lives Matter and you're not treating your black citizens properly, and you've got Antifa and all these other things, and you're just a bunch of racists. Whereas we should have said, shut the hell up, get out of here, we're not talking to you anymore. You have no claim, of virtue when it comes to how you treat your own people, the Mongolians, the Uyghurs, the Tibetans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we should have said, but we can't because we've got, a criminal administration bent on a political agenda. I have to let you go because I really want to get to the vaccine bill of rights and some of the other things, but this is scary because these people have no business there. And I don't know which is worse, the fact that the Democrats are appointing a bunch of Marxists or gay advocates or both, into our Defense Department, or the fact that the Republicans have absolutely no ability to do oversight, because if you call them racist or homophobic, they quiver at the knees, and melt like the Wicked Witch of the West with a little bit of water in her face. These people have no guts, no patriotism, no nothing. And actually, the strongest people are some of the new women that are coming up in Congress. Just to change the subject, the woman who has the cafe, where everybody carries a gun in Colorado, and the one in, I've forgotten the other representative who's I think she's the one that carries a gun in Washington, and Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia. So there's some great people out there, but they don't have the support because most Republicans would rather have a nice committee chair than save their country. And so that's our – I want to leave you with one thought. I wrote a meme on Facebook, even though my account's suspended twice now. So we're definitely having more impact because they're going after me. But I said the Marxists are trying to destroy this country. The Patriots are trying to save this country. And the Republicans are waiting to see who wins.
Yeah, that's a good statement, right? I agree with you. Where are the Republicans and where are the Joint Chiefs of Staff? They're both of them are just sitting back and letting this happen. In fact, I think they're actually facilitating this, because when with the Republican, I'll bet you the Republicans are going to support these nominees. They're not going to object to them.
No oversight. Have they been to hearing?
Very few will object to them, and none of them will object to them based on their transgender or gay agenda or their anti-nuclear type agenda. They're just going to basically rubber stamp them. And the military has already surrendered. The generals that we have are such political generals. If they're going to go along with this attempted commissariat purge, an investigation of the ranks for potential domestic violent extremists, being defined as anybody who would have voted for Trump, they'll go along with anything. So
yeah.
We are in huge trouble.
Let's pray for the Arizona audit.
Sounds less depressing. So maybe we can talk about that next week.
Well, the most encouraging thing is the Arizona forensic election audit. I think they're going to prove, I think they're already proving, the evidence is coming out that there's massive fraud in Arizona. Georgia has like 10 times the fraud that Arizona has. And one state is going to reverse and declare for Trump. And when that happens, there's going to be another state and another state. And we're going to be faced with a fascinating situation where Trump's going to have over 270 electoral votes from the 2020 election. And Biden, the loser, the thief in chief, is going to be in the very interesting position of being an illegal president, which we already know, but the evidence is going to come out. That's where I see this going. And so, we're living in one of the most interesting times in our history right now. So hang on, fasten your seatbelt. It's going to get a lot bumpier. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like what was the old Chinese saying, may you not live in interesting times, but
may you live in interesting times. I think these are very interesting times. All right, sir, I have to let you go.
Not live in interesting times.
Not live in interesting times?
Yeah, right, exactly, because interesting times are usually not good times to live in. I mean, that's the point of the that's the point of that old saying, may you not live in interesting times. Live in a time of peace and prosperity where nothing exciting happens. Interesting times are usually times of war. That's the point of that that saying. But anyway, okay, my friend, another thank you for letting me spout off. If nothing else, I find these sessions therapeutic. And now you're probably going to be besieged by the LGBTQ whatever community in outrage over our
I've had LGBTQ folks on. I have no problem with the LGBTQ community. In fact, but I argue that you can't have special rights, you know. And if you're going to go ahead.
I have a problem with the community as a political movement trying to impose their values on us, but I don't have a problem with the individuals. I had, I had very friendly relations with gay neighbors when I lived in Florida. You know, nice people, responsible people. You know, I have no problem with them as people. I just have a problem with them trying to educate elementary school kids when they go that far into thinking that that they're going to teach my kids that it's okay to be, that's going to be an acceptable lifestyle for them. Or if you're trying to make Assistant Secretary of Defense for manpower, you know, and have an LGBTQ agenda being imposed upon our troops, I'm against that, you know.
Agreed.
So, anyway. Yeah. But that was how this is going to be construed. Well, all right. I'll let you go. So
don't worry about it. We just say what we say, and we stand by what we say. And if anybody wants to, has a question or wants to, you know, sort of has an argument against us, come on the show, 215-383-3832. That's why we have call-ins. All right. I can play a couple things. Pianchi's on the line, and I will be back in a minute. Thank you again, sir, for another fascinating discussion. This has been great.
Okay. The ICBM next week. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Dr. Peter Pry, it's fascinating. We have all these things we want to cover. We get to maybe a tenth of it. And that's the way it goes. All right, Pianchi, hang on. I'll be right back to you in just a little bit. Let me play a couple things. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
All right, let's crank it up and get going again.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
You know, I'm so glad I learned how to make all those things because I have so much fun with my promos. I need more promos. I got several I want to do. But, again, the constraints of time are unbelievable when it comes to the legislation we're writing and all the things we're doing. The two biggest bills, and like I say, I've got some folks who will be coming on the show talking about, for example, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, the fact that the messenger RNA genetic modification shots they're passing off as vaccines, you know, are dangerous, you know, and there's no reason for them to be there. And we have a procedure to reform the FDA. You know, if you have a cure for COVID, you don't need vaccines. And that seems to be left out of the conversation all the time. We've got, and so we have another bill, a product liability bill, that puts all the product liability back on the vaccine manufacturers because they're the ones making the damn stuff. They should be responsible and accountable for it. Okay, so all these things are happening, and it's fascinating that you know, the Dr. Fascist, and as I mentioned this in the first hour, you know, I think he's the greatest genocidal psychopathic drug pusher of all time. He actually engineered a pandemic with the WHO, with China, and with a bunch of other folks to make a fortune off his vaccine patents, and was willing to kill 500,000 people to do it by not allowing hydroxychloroquine and other cures to get out there. And this pandemic, this epidemic, this virus should have been done in about 3 weeks. And if we had the hydroxychloroquine out there, because we knew March 2nd, we knew this was stuff, we knew there was a cure for COVID a year ago, March 2nd. Okay, we broadcast it here. Other folks, Laura Ingraham broadcast it 2 weeks later. We beat her. We beat Fox News by 2 weeks. And basically, it was me. You know, beat all of Fox News by 2 weeks. And so those 2 weeks could have been critical to getting hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, and azithromycin out there, the Zelenko protocol. And, there, you know, if every adult had a warp speed preventive of COVID, COVID would have been gone. It would have been kicked out of everybody's system. And none of this, the mask, none of the lockdowns, none of this stuff would have happened. But it was all engineered by Dr. Fascist, who went behind Trump, lied to him, lied to the American people, worked with the governors to have these lockdowns, probably lied to them too. Said, if you don't do this, millions of people are going to die, which was all a threat to sell vaccines. Everything comes back to selling vaccines, which is why we need a vaccine bill of rights to stop this nonsense. On that note, let me bring back Pianchi and get your take on all this. But do you agree with my characterization of Dr. Fascist and the whole idea that this hoax was nothing but a vaccine sales plan?
Yeah, vaccine sales plan. Mm-hmm. At some point, they're going to have a fire sale. But I guess I dropped off when I was talking about the prisoners of war,
uh-huh.
Peter.
Yeah.
You know, during World War II, we were fighting the Japanese Empire,
mm-hmm.
and pilots, planes used to have to ditch in the ocean because they was probably running out of fuel after their bombing mission. Well, the Japanese used to row out and bring the pilots back aboard the ship. They would torture them, mm-hmm. and then they would weigh the bodies down and dump them off alive into the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the Japanese didn't, you know, the Bushido Code, if you were caught as a soldier, you were considered already dead. You know, there.
Oh, yeah, especially in the ocean.
Such a cowardly
thing to do.
Because
nobody could refute it.
Yeah, and so they didn't honor the Geneva Convention. They didn't, you know, and this is the same Japanese nation that's one of our best allies right now. It's fascinating how these things change. But during the war, you know, the Bataan Death March, you know, the fact that soldiers were beheaded for not being able to keep up, you know, the Doolittle Raiders, I don't know how many of them, I think a couple of them were beheaded, those that were caught. But yeah, Japanese did terrible things. And it started, you know, 1937 with the rape of Nanking and other Chinese cities. You know, this is their military dictatorship did these kind of things. The Nazis did horrible things. The Russian, you know, under Stalin did horrible things. You know, Chinese did horrible things under Mao to their own people. You know, and so this is, you know, the world can be a pretty horrible place. We don't think of these things here because we live a pretty sheltered life. But now we're getting a taste of what a Marxist, you know, dictatorship would look like. Stealing an election, putting in power a figurehead, having all these folks behind the scenes, putting their minions, their apparatchiks in power. So we're experiencing what the rest of the world is experiencing, but we're fighting back. And I think this is the one country that can fight back. We just have to – people have to be alerted to know exactly why there is a need to fight back and who to fight back against. That's my job, as well as every other decent, independent journalist. Well, actually, I'm not a journalist.
Well, yeah, you know, you were talking about – he was talking about the female pilots, soldiers mm-hmm. haven't been in a position where they could be targeted, but that would go on. See, when you do it at sea, there's no dispute. You can't. Nobody can tell you that you brought the bodies or you rescued those pilots. And it brings me back to thinking how they supposedly disposed of Bin Laden's body. Dumped him in the sea.
Yeah, see, that to me makes no sense. Why would you do an autopsy? Why wouldn't you do everything possible to find out, you know, search him forensically, you know, do the DNA, do the whole bit? I mean, that makes no sense.
You don't have nobody.
Did they ever?
There's no dead body.
What's that?
Yeah, he may have. And some people do say, you remember the lady that was running for a prime minister, what was it, Pakistan? I think she made mention that he died before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
oh, yeah. So I think, yeah, that's beside the point. And, you know, like I say, I don't have a problem. So Peter and I disagree on women, you know, in the military. Like I said, there's no guarantee to serve. There's no physical, you know, there's no right, you know, to serve in a particular area. They take, you know, who's qualified to do so. Granted, I think I could have easily flown a C-130, even though I was wearing glasses, because you don't eject out of a C-130. So that to me makes no sense. But those were the rules at the time. You know, now they've loosened up. Now people can get eye surgery, and they could fly, whereas before you had to have natural perfect vision, which I did at 16, but not by 19. It's kind of one of my own little personal stories. All right. I want to talk about something completely different. Before I do that, do you have any comment on what's going on in Arizona with the election audit?
Yeah, I do.
I think that's fascinating. Okay, go ahead.
I think it's fascinating, but I think it's a disgrace that the Democrats want to stop the forensic audit. They would let you count all the ballots over and over and over again because you was counting bad ballots.
Mm-hmm.
But now that the forensic audit is going on where you can explicitly look at where things originated from and whether they're any good or not, they're trying to stop that. Wonder why.
Of course they are. Well, because they want to keep their power. Again, listen to One American News. If you get a hold of Christina Bob's editorial, her last comment, it's like, you know, they've caught them. They've got the evidence. This is the last gasp of power. They know their days are numbered. They know the Biden, you know, thief in chief, the Biden insurrection only has so much time. So they're trying to do as much damage as they can and stop as much as they can by whatever means they can until ultimately they're gone. And ultimately they're going to be gone. I think they'll be gone before the midterms. I think they have to be gone before the midterms or the midterms will be meaningless. You know, and so all these things that are going on, things are going to start accelerating. Once Arizona flips, you know, then things are going to get really crazy. Okay, and so if you think things are you think the Democrats are losing their you know their stuff now, just wait until Arizona says, you know what, we're recertifying for Donald Trump. That's when it's going to be fun. So I disagree with Peter.
Well,
I'd rather live in interesting times. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what happens. Okay, I'm gonna drop off and listen.
Okay, and I got another caller. I'm gonna try this call here. I know it's a blocked line. It's either blocked line or Skype. So I'm gonna give this person one chance to be a decent person. If they're not a decent person, they're gonna be off the air. So let me just try this live line. So my live line that just called in. Where are you from, and what's your first name? And they left. Okay, fine. No, Pianki left. Okay, Pianki, call back. Are you there, caller? Going once, going twice. All right, we'll just mute that line and see if we can get Pianki back. In the meantime, while Pianki's having, I guess, a little bit of phone trouble, let me talk about this. There's several sources of this, but if you go to America's Frontline Doctors or you go to – there's a thing here, State of the Union. It's a website that I'll be drawing this from. This is memorializing resolution urging states to immediately enact a vaccine bill of rights. Okay. One of the problems I have, and one of the things I'm trying to get Chris Ann Hall back on the show. She's a constitutional attorney. And I'll talk to Jonathan Mosley, our constitutional attorney and legal expert that reports on Thursdays, is this idea that at work you don't have constitutional rights. Okay. And I know there's a discrepancy when people say, well, wait a minute, does that mean I have my free speech rights? I can stand on my desk and proclaim my politics and disrupt the workforce? No. That's not what I'm talking about. Because you have your free speech rights outside of work and outside of your job. And that's why you can't kneel during the national anthem as a free speech. You can kneel during the national anthem as a private citizen away from the job. I'm talking about constitutional rights to your life, liberty, and property being your body against unreasonable searches and seizures. It's due process rights. But I believe, you know, as long as you can exercise your First Amendment rights somewhere, you don't have to exercise those on the job. Same thing with religion. You don't have to exercise, you know, your freedom of religion on the job, although you might want to, and accommodations can reasonably be made. You know, I understand that. That's not what we're talking about here. The things that happen at work are the things that are basically a seizure, an unreasonable seizure of your person, you know, papers, effects, things like that. That's in the Fourth Amendment, okay, you know, without a warrant. So an employer does not have the right to give you, to force you to have a medical device on your face, which is a mask. An employer does not have the right to give you, to mandate that you take a vaccine. You know, they don't have the right to invade your body as a condition of work. They just don't. And that includes health workers too. A lot of health workers aren't taking the vaccine, okay? And so the problem is that people have this perception that you don't have constitutional rights at work. And so I want to try and make this as clear as possible. One of the ways I found, one of the people that are doing this, and I'm going to, you know, send this to Shannon Rice and to Representative Anthony Sabatini and some other folks here, Representative Michelle Saltzman. She's our local state representative here in Florida, just outside my district. But my particular rep is not talking to me. I've tried. Hey, listen, you know, dude, I got a show here. I'm in your district. You should do something about that. Anyway, so let me talk about this vaccine bill of rights and see if this makes sense to you. Okay. So it's from America's Frontline Doctors. That would be Dr. Simone Gold. That would be Dr. Stella Emanuel. That would be some of the other folks that came out for hydroxychloroquine, came out for the COVID cure, came out against the vaccines, came out for medical choice, came out for medical disclosure, came out for all the good things that you think normal, you know, doctors would come out for, to give you as a patient, as a consumer of medical, you know, treatment, the ability to make good choices and good decisions based on good information. Okay. Dr. Fascist doesn't want to do that. He wants to mandate vaccines, mandate masks, control who you can see, you know, control whether you can have 4th of July or not, control the size of groups, control the economy, and control a bunch of things that he has no legal authority to control, because nobody does. Okay. So he wants to be the health dictator. He wants to use medicine to dictate everything about your life. Okay, that's why he should be fired, arrested, put away. Because as I said, he is the greatest, genocidal, psychopathic drug pusher of all time, and I'll stand by that. All right, back to America's Frontline Doctors. A memorializing resolution for the state of, and you can put in whatever state you want. So I got to send this off. So for the state of, let's say Florida, to protect its citizens against unconstitutional and medically irresponsible COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Whereas, there's a lot of whereases in this, whereas the founders designated that a Bill of Rights was necessary to guard individual liberty against encroachments from the state and federal actors, public and private, and whereas the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution explicitly directs states not to deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of laws. That also includes the privileges and immunities too. And so there's your 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment is key because the 14th Amendment is the one that brings the Bill of Rights beyond the federal government to the states and to the people. So in other words, you know, whereas the federal government, whereas, there we go again, whereas the Constitution originally applied only to federal laws and Congress and things like that, I always thought that was a mistake. Because a Constitution that doesn't apply to everybody and a Bill of Rights that doesn't apply to everybody in all laws, be they federal, state, or local, is no Constitution at all. Okay. So in other words, if your rights are universal, if your rights are endowed by your creator, if you're born with these rights, it doesn't matter where the laws are that might impinge on those rights or infringe on those rights. So if the federal government is prohibited from infringing on your rights, but the state government is allowed to, then there's no point in having rights at all. Okay, so that's why the 14th Amendment clears up a lot of problems that was in our early founding where we didn't have the 14th Amendment. Okay, so it says deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The key thing they're missing there is unreasonable searches and seizures. Okay, so unreasonable is the variable term, and I would argue that if somebody is sick with the symptoms of a disease, a communicable dangerous disease, then that's your due process. And if you've been determined that, you can be quarantined. If you have like Ebola or various other diseases, You know, even SARS-CoV-2 COVID, if you're demonstrated to have it, if you have the symptoms, if you've been determined to have it through testing, and it's communicable and public health says, we got to hold you there, that's different. You know, they're quarantining healthy people, and that's the problem. So if you're demonstrated sick, that's your due process, and you can be quarantined. You can quarantine sick people. That makes sense. But you cannot quarantine healthy people. You cannot use cases to quarantine people. Okay, because a case just means you have the either the antibodies or the virus in you. But just because you have the virus in you doesn't mean that you're sick from the virus, because everybody has millions of viruses in them all the time. You know, the whole population would be quarantined. We'd always be under quarantine. Nobody could do anything. So that doesn't make sense. All right. Whereas no COVID vaccine is FDA approved, but some are authorized under a temporary emergency use authorization as experimental investigational agents only. See, that's really important. You need to understand that there isn't a single COVID vaccine that is approved by the FDA. It's simply not. Okay. That should be made clear every day, because that process takes 10 years. When did COVID-19 come out? 2019. Okay. So that means at least 2029, 2030 before a vaccine would be approved by the FDA. Well, see the manufacturers of Moderna, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, they didn't want to wait the 10 years, okay? That's why they helped engineer this pandemic through Dr. Fascist, you know, so the pandemic creates the Declaration of Emergency. Declaration of Emergency creates the emergency use authorizations. The emergency use authorizations authorize experimental vaccines to be used during a pandemic, which is an emergency. See, if there wasn't a pandemic and there wasn't an emergency, you couldn't authorize these vaccines that have to be FDA approved, and that would take 9 more years. They didn't want to wait that long. That's why they created the pandemic. We've talked about that in other shows. Whereas emergency use products are specifically prohibited by federal law, 21 U.S.C. Section 360BBB-3, from being mandated. Oh, I got to look that section of law up. Authorization for medical products for use in emergencies require the option to accept or refuse administration of the product. Guess what I get to look up? In fact, let's do it right now. Now I'm curious. So let me just make a little fun. So let's go. 21 U.S.C. Section 360BBB-3. Anybody else curious? I'm curious. I might have to report on this tomorrow if it's too big. But let's take a look. I mean, I read stuff. Let's see what this is. Let's see where this takes us. 21 U.S.C. Section 360 takes us to, hopefully, the Cornell Law Review. Authorization for here we go. Yeah, Cornell Law. I love Cornell Law School. They put out the best stuff. So I'm just going to leave this for next time. U.S. Code, Section 360BBB-3, Authorization for Medical Products for Use in Emergencies. Oh, this is interesting. Notwithstanding any provision of this chapter and Section 351 of the Public Health Service Act, 42 U.S.C. 262. See, the problem with laws is they keep sending you to other laws. This is why people go nuts trying to read laws. And subject to provisions may authorize the introduction into interstate commerce. There you go. There's the Interstate Commerce Clause of Congress during the effective period of a declaration under subsection of a drug, device, or biological product intended for use in an actual or potential emergency. What the hell's a potential emergency? It's either an emergency or it's not. It's like pregnant. Can you be potentially pregnant? No, you either are or you aren't. Okay. An authorization under paragraph, may authorize an emergency use of a product that is not approved, licensed, or cleared for commercial distribution. So in other words, in an emergency, you can use stuff okay. All right. I'm going to look at this later. I've got to post this law. This is great. So anyway, that's fascinating. So this is, I guess it says what? So this is how they give you medical products in an emergency. But they had, when there actually isn't an emergency. I mean, COVID's gone. It would have been if we'd taken the cures. But the COVID pandemic really ended last July. What you're seeing now is manufactured numbers and a whole bunch of problems. All right. I mean, there's a lot of things here. I don't know if I want to read all these. I think you get the idea that there is a Bill of Rights. Let me see if I can skip down a little bit and go, whereas that the major principles of this vaccine Bill of Rights will include a minimum of four of the following six provisions. I would include all six. I think it's stupid not to. It says no persons will be mandated, coerced, forced, or pressured to take an experimental or investigational medication. And that includes all the COVID vaccines. Point two, no physician or nurse shall be asked by an employer to promote a COVID-19 vaccine. Point three, All persons reserve the right at all times to determine what is in their own best medical interest without threat to their livelihood or freedom of movement. In other words, no vaccine passports and lay the hell off me on the job. Okay. Point four, all persons must be given access to independent information. That's non-government, folks. That's non-Dr. Fascist. All right. Independent information to help them determine what is in their own best medical interest, including the risk of death based upon age, condition, from contracting COVID-19 naturally. This must include information from sources that are independent of the conflict of interest, of a conflict of interest. For example, pharmaceutical companies have an inherent conflict of interest, as do government or quasi-government institutions. That would be the CDC. They're sort of a quasi-government because they're not really a government institution. Such information can be included but cannot be the sole source of information. The frail elderly are additionally entitled to a knowledgeable, independent advocate with medical training to help them determine their own medical interests. And lastly, private businesses operating within the jurisdiction have no legal authority to require or mandate or coerce medication or experimental medication for any persons. And they go on for much more whereases. A lot of whereases here. So it gets kind of complicated when you go through all that stuff. But that's the Vaccine Bill of Rights. Okay, and so I may get back to that. I may do more with it. You may want to talk about that. But there's a bunch of articles. You know, see if I can pull up my. I've got several of them here, of the many problems with the COVID vaccine. You know, there's a reason for this. But basically, they're saying, you know, that you can't be forced to take a vaccine to work. You can't be forced to take a vaccine. You know, you can't be forced to have a vaccine before you travel. In other words, the rights that you're born with are maintained. And what it comes down to is what we've talked about on the show before. You don't buy your birthright back by getting a vaccine. Okay. You don't have to prove, you know, you're worthy of constitutional rights. All right. You're born with your constitutional rights and you always have them. So, but what they're trying to say is that you can't have them unless you buy them back with a vaccine. So that's what the vaccine passports are all about. You can't travel unless you have a vaccine. That's unconstitutional. That's illegal. Because the truth is, you have a right to travel. Okay? Now, is that you're going to find that in the Constitution? No. But try being a free society without being able to travel freely. Okay? I would call that one of the rights not specifically mentioned. The Supreme Court mentions it. In fact, they mention it when they say that driver's licenses are unconstitutional. It's kind of interesting. We can talk about that too. But there's something about the government people that want to control everything. Now, I know Dr. Fascist wants money. I mean, that's his thing, all right? This is about control and about money. And so Bill Clinton was always about control. He was never really about money. You know, Joe Biden's all about money, you know, and control. But I don't think he cares about the control as much as he cares about the money. Because you look at his family, everything they've done is to advance their family fortune, you know, whereas everything Obama's done is to advance, you know, his control. So it's fascinating how these two things work, but that's what's going on. Anyway, if you want to give me a call, feel free. We've got 17 minutes left. I'll just have a little free-for-all. I've certainly talked enough. I'm going to find my stories on my election stuff. You know, my paro there. I was sort of trying to find, let me see, I know I've got them here too, Vaccine Bill of Rights. Yeah, let me go give you some of the horror stories of what's going on with the vaccines, because it's pretty bad. Let's play something for you here. What would be a cool thing to play now? Let me see here. I play that. I'll find a couple of things here. Let me see if I can find some sponsors here. We need sponsors for the show. It's as simple as that. The more sponsors, the more marketing we can do.
Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed,
and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Okay, I've had enough fun sort of searching through my articles, you know, fussing around with things, and I, as usual, I've completely changed my mind on what I want to cover in the last 15 minutes. So I found there's like a ton of stuff on my you really want to go to my Parler account at Greg Penglis, because there are so many articles there that I cannot post on Facebook. I mean, it's just it's criminal that these folks are censoring us. And the cure for that, I've already written the lawsuit. So if any lawyer or any foundation lawyer wants to get in touch with me, I'll send that to you. And then we've got some really innovative legal theories for how to combat this. Plus, I've rewritten Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act to take care of that also. All right. So I found something very interesting, this website All Africa. And so I was curious. I'd heard before, and I've reported this before, that coronavirus in Africa is very low, amazingly low. And the reason that we all suspect, and that's been reported, is that because so millions of adults in Africa take chloroquine as a preventive for malaria. Well, chloroquine is also, you know, with hydroxychloroquine, one of the major preventives and cures for COVID-19. So if you have a country that's taking huge amounts of chloroquine to prevent malaria, it's reasonable to assume that COVID counts can be really low. Of course, that's the evidence. So that's why you never hear about Africa, okay? Because the major news media that's trying to panic you to work in coercion with Dr. Fascist, the WHO, and the Chinese to force you to take a vaccine and pay for it, don't want you to know that in Africa, the incidence is ridiculously low, okay? So let's do a little case study here. The country of Tanzania. Tanzania, total cases, okay? This is infections, right? Of a 40 times amplified, you know, PRC sample. Total cases in Tanzania, 509. Do you believe that? That's it. In all of Africa, the total cases of COVID in Tanzania is 509. That is a staggering low number. We had, what, 15,000 people killed in New York nursing homes because of Andrew Cuomo, and the entire nation of Tanzania has 509 cases? Total recoveries. See, here's the other nice thing about this website I found, All Africa. It's on Parler. It's on my Facebook page. You know, it's allafrica.com/coronavirus /COVID-19. -map. Okay. Total recoveries total cases, 4 million. No, that's Tanzania. Where's Tanzania? Here we go. Total cases, 509. Total recoveries, 183. Total deaths. Are you ready? 21. Should I say that? We have towns in this country that have more deaths from COVID than that. All of which, of course, were unnecessary because if they'd gotten, you know, Zelenko protocol, hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, and azithromycin, you know, 85 to 90% of them would be still with us. So anyway, Tanzania, 509 cases, 183 recoveries, 21 deaths. Africa overall, total cases, 4,497,207. Sounds like a lot, right? Total recoveries, 4,010,159. Total deaths, 119,841. So the entire continent of Africa, all 55 countries, millions upon millions of millions of people, the total death count, 119,000. And half of those are in South Africa, all right, which probably locked down, which probably had mask mandates, which probably had vaccines, and probably did a bunch of things, and probably didn't take chloroquine for malaria. That'd be my guess. So South Africa, you look at this map, it's really great. So South Africa has the worst problem. Cases, 1,574,370. Recoveries, 1,500,360, okay? So see, this is the thing that the CDC never reports recoveries. Okay, the what's that big hospital that's always Johnson something, whatever it is, yeah. They never report recoveries. Why? Because they don't want you to know how many people are recovering and doing just fine, thank you. So 1,574,000 cases, 1,500,360 recoveries. So the deaths in South Africa, the worst, 54,125. Okay, best case, Tanzania. I'm laughing because this is so amazingly stupid and dangerous that all these people have been killed in this country for no reason. Because Trump was lied to, the governors were lied to, the mayors were lied to, all by Dr. Fascist, the most evil genocidal drug pusher in in history. All right. Tanzania, 509 deaths, 183 recoveries, 509 cases, 183 deaths, 21 recoveries. It's right there. I could pick another country. Mozambique, 69,643 cases, 62,462 recoveries, 807 deaths. 807 deaths. Madagascar, 35,262 cases, 28,132 recoveries, 593 deaths. Okay. Mali, 13,500 cases, 7,989 recoveries, 482 deaths. It's actually bad in comparison. Anyway, it just keeps going. Eritrea, 3,605 cases, 3,410 recoveries, deaths, 10. You know, that's a smaller country. So all these countries are here with this staggering amount of prevention through chloroquine. Okay. And this is the part that really, there's a couple of things that stand out. And the reasons I believe this is all, the whole COVID thing has just been a marketing ploy, a genocidal drug pushing marketing ploy to make Big Pharma, Dr. Fascist, the Chinese, and the WHO rich, because they never talk about a cure. Can you think of any disease ever where they didn't talk about the cure? You know, if you remember back in college, STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, I always talked about the cure, penicillin, okay? You know, your grandmother, if you got sick, and you got the chicken soup thing, all right, whether you're Greek or Jewish or Italian or whatever it was, you got the soup. Why? For a cure. It actually worked, too. Chicken soup's, amazing recuperative stuff. You take a look at any disease. Yes, they have vaccinations for it, but they always have a cure, okay? Flu, you may get it, and they may vaccinate you against it, but if you get it, there's a cure. Okay, there are antibiotics for bacterial infections. There are antivirals for viral infections. There are germ things for germ infections, And so all these things, we have cures. That we're looking for a cure for cancer. We're not looking for. Well, they're looking for a vaccine now. That's another story. But vaccines appear to be taking over for cures. If that's the case, if you never get rid of the disease, if you sell vaccines to build up immunity to the disease, especially when you can build it up naturally, you'll always have a market for your vaccines. Whereas if you cure the disease, that's the end of the marketing for that particular product. All right. So the reason they don't want hydroxychloroquine as a cure is because they know that'll end the market. Whereas the vaccine can go on forever. One shot, two shots, booster shots, yearly shots, it never ends. It never ends, because you're always going to need another vaccine, all right? Whereas with the cure, you don't. So if you know the cure, you can go down to your pharmacy. You see, in an ideal world, if you've got the symptoms of COVID, the first day you'd go down to your pharmacy, you'd get a preventive or a protocol that would kick it out of your system real fast, like 2 or 3 days. Hydroxychloroquine, zinc sulfate, azithromycin, and you're done. Do you need a vaccine? No, because you got a cure. Ideally, your body would also build up immunities. But if you get it again, you still got the cure. Okay, so the cure still works. All right. Now, could it build up an immunity to it? Theoretically. Oh, sorry, just adjusting my seat here. But, any disease could build up an immunity. That's why the preponderance of drugs being given, is so bad, because disease building up immunity, which means you need more of them. All right, let me go through some scary headlines here and tell you about the vaccine. Vaccine impacts. This is another article that I cannot post on Facebook or any, leftist social media site. 7,766 dead, 330,218 injuries, European database of adverse drug reactions for COVID-19 vaccines. So this is going on in Europe. All right. The European database, April 24th, 2021. This is Vaccine Impact, and this is by the editor, Brian Shilavy, S-H-I-L-A-V-Y. Excuse me for just a second here. Okay, thank you. I'm back. Sorry. Here we go. European database of suspected drug reaction reports is EUDRA Vigilance, which also tracks reports of injuries and deaths following experimental COVID-19 vaccines. All right, here's what EUDRA Vigilance states about their database. This website was launched by the European Medicines Agency in 2012 to provide public access to reports of suspected side effects, also known as suspected adverse drug reactions, you know, like injury and death, okay? These reports are submitted electronically to Eurovigilance by national medicines regulatory authorities and by pharmaceutical companies that hold marketing authorizations, you know, licenses for medicines, okay? It's a pretty good group, all right? So they've got reports here. You can go to my page, Action Radio, at Greg Penglis on Parler. I've got the report there. Or just go to Vaccine Impact. You know, it's a great page with all kinds of good information. That's just one. All right, let me give you another scary headline. All right, here we go. Oh, we're doing the All-Africa thing. Health Impact News, okay, on the domestic front. CDC reports 3,486 dead, 86,000 injuries. And I bet you they're under-reporting because Americans, I think they only report, what, 2% of the actual cases of people who are injured and killed with vaccines? So he says mass murder, 3,486 deaths in the U.S. following COVID injections in 4 months. Here's the one that got me. More vaccine deaths recorded than the past 15 years combined. Still want the vaccine? Still think don't think we should have a vaccine bill of rights? You know, when they're trying to force you into a vaccine just to do normal stuff like travel, go to work, go to school? Are you willing to risk your life to go to work and go to school? You need to go to work. You need to go to school. And you need to travel, especially if your business involves travel. Right? Those are things you need to do to earn your living. But are you going to have a living if your living is taken away by a vaccine that's required for you to earn your living? Think of the absurdity of that. Brian Shively, editor, Health Impact News, said the CDC announced this week that deaths reported to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, that's our version of what Europe does, all right, the VAERS, V-A-E-R-S, a U.S. government-funded database that tracks injuries and deaths caused by vaccines following experimental COVID injections, have now reached 3,486 deaths since December of 2020 when the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA COVID shots were given emergency use authorization. Interesting, huh? So why do we have an emergency? You know, if we have a cure, we don't have an emergency. You know, and if we have a cure, we don't have to rush these things out there. Why would you need a vaccine to build up immunity to a disease that's already here? You want immunity before the disease gets here. So if these folks are really on their toes, they would have had everything out ready to go, you know, long before this actually hit. You know, because, well, that would defeat the purpose because, I still believe they engineered this. They engineered it for an election year. They made sure that chloroquine would never became a cure so they could keep selling vaccines, and they destroyed Trump in the process. So not a bad work for Dr. Fascist. Here's another one, Alliance for Natural Health. And this is April 22nd, 2021, so just a few days ago. Feds on vitamins and COVID, shut up or pay up. See, here's the other reason that I know that this is a vaccine marketing scheme by a genocidal, drug-pushing psychopath, Dr. Fascist, all right? Because they say here, more lunacy from the federal government threatens doctors with $10,000 fines if they tell you the science about how vitamins and minerals can help with COVID. Think about that. Why would the feds, unless they're in on it, have a $10,000 fine for doctors who tell you that vitamin C, vitamin D boost your immunity? Why is that a crime? Because you can't have a cure for COVID. You can only have vaccines. It's all part of the marketing. You see how it works? Okay. You can't have hydroxychloroquine because that's a cure. You can't have vitamins to build up your immunity because then you don't need the vaccine. If you have a cure, you don't need the vaccine. If you have natural immunity from vitamins, you don't need the vaccine. They want to push the vaccine on you at all costs. That's why they want vaccine passports and requiring it at work and requiring it at school and requiring it everywhere. You see how this all works? Okay. So anything that will help you other than the vaccine is banned because they want to sell the vaccine. This is a government, corporate, psychopathic, genocidal marketing scheme for profit. And 500,000 Americans have paid the price. Okay. Don't you. I only have 90 seconds left. I can't believe it. I'm having such a fascinating time. Let me just read this next paragraph. The Department of Justice recently announced the first enforcement action against, quote, deceptive marketing of COVID treatments. The case involves a Missouri chiropractor who is alleged to have advertised that a vitamin D and zinc supplement could prevent or treat COVID claims that are well supported in the scientific literature. Yeah, they are. This is a disturbing and outrageous escalation in the federal government's actions against doctors and health professionals. I've got the, I'll probably get into this tomorrow maybe, that the FDA and the Justice Department are actually going after people talking about cures. Right? Think about that. You know, that anything that strikes of curing or preventing or boosting immunity, you know, is called illegal. And we're going to get into the COVID-19 Consumer Protection Act that is anything but. That's the government's way of shutting out anything except vaccines. See how this all works? This has been an amazing show. I want to thank all the folks that participated. Back tomorrow with hopefully another amazing show. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, and that would be Central Time.